Good morning, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome into the 1030 The Voice studios for this drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I am your host, Zach Yenser, joined in studio by some special guests. We'll get into that in a minute. We're going to talk about the eviction moratorium that is ending. What does that look like? What does that mean? And where do we go from here? We'll talk with Danny Nee from the Community Investment Corporation, Megan Headings, the Executive Director of the Family Housing Resources, FHR, will also be with us for till the bottom of the hour. And then Devin Underwood will call in. Workforce pivots. We'll talk about how small and mid-sized businesses in a labor market that is really driven by labor interests. And I don't mean union. I mean really those who are working in the market now have a bit more leverage in terms of getting and asking for what they want. So how can small and mid-sized businesses stand out in the crowd and making sure that they have the talent to be successful? So that's our show today. Danny, Megan, it's good to be with you. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
This was actually, like I mentioned in the green room, this was a listener-driven request to say, look, this is kind of all coming to a head. We've seen eviction moratoriums throughout COVID have at least two or three renewals, both at the state and federal levels. When does the eviction moratorium here in Pima County and the state end? And is there a renewal on the horizon?
So the current one actually ends June 30th. And unfortunately, we don't believe there is an extension on the horizon. So there's been a lot of really good advocacy work here, both locally and federally, pushing for that. I know that we have, you know, Ann Kirkpatrick's office. They've been really pushing and advocating for extensions. And at the federal level, the National Low Income Housing Coalition has been pushing for that. But unfortunately, it doesn't seem like there's much traction. There's so much progress being made right now on vaccines. There's so much progress happening in regards to COVID that I think the push now is more in getting people back to employed and back to self-sufficiency. And so it's a real struggle because that need has not gone away. There's a lot of funds available, but it's now a matter of time before those can get out to the individuals.
And the money is getting out quickly, efficiently, and to the people it needs to, right, Danny Nee?
For the most part. it is getting out quickly and efficiently at this point, but what I want to say is there's still a backlog of people who are still waiting. They're on our wait list. It's just right now we've had over 10,000 applications, and we have over 60 people, case managers, who are working to process these applications on a daily basis. We're getting through about $1.3 million a week at the moment. We're hoping to get that up to close to $2 million a week. Overall, the amount of money that was put aside for this was roughly $34 million that was in direct assistance, and then another $3 million to actually pay for the administration to pay all the organizations to get the funds out. So it is, we're doing it more efficiently than any place in Arizona, quite honestly.
That's a fact. It's data.
That is a fact.
It is a fact.
Congratulations. That's not just
It is huge.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure listeners realize that's actually a fact.
And honestly, nationwide, I would have to shout out to both the city and the county and CIC for how they've approached that distribution, because there's a lot of best practices that are currently being discussed, and it's complicated to do this. There weren't federal requirements of things to follow. There's just guidance from the Treasury. And honestly, I feel like CIC and the county and city have both really acknowledged the best practices and put those into place. And so that's part of the success.
Yeah, and so it's just one of those things where I'm absolutely proud of what we've been able to do. Thankful for our partners, which include FHR. Megan's crew also is one of the providers of the case management. But there's still a lot of people. Currently, we're looking at 2,500 people who are eligible, who are not yet don't have a case manager assigned. Currently, we have 1,070 people who are being worked with. And that's roughly, we're working with about 1,000 per week. Again, we're getting through somewhere around right now, a little bit short of 300. And again, we're hoping to get up closer to 300 to 350 households a week that we can help.
And honestly, I do want to just add that while the system that has been put in place is helping so many people, and we know right now one of the challenges is just getting to, you know, getting the caseworkers to be able to service those individuals and help them and get them through the process. And frankly, that's not meeting the true need. So even though we have such a big backlog on those cases that have already submitted, we really don't know who's not captured yet. And in my opinion, there's a fair number of people that have not been captured, because this program, I mean, the city, the county, it's posted on their websites, but there's not been a big push of information out there about it. And part of that is because there's already such an enormous backlog. It's hard to then put more information out there. It's not, you know, when you know people are just going on a wait list. But unfortunately, I would say that there's still a lot of individuals that are unaware of the resource that's available and that there is some help out there. There are things that are happening, like this last week, there was a resource fair that talked about it more. And I think that probably saw a big bump in the number of people that applied. But in shows like this, I hope that people are then able to spread the word that this is available.
And on that note, you know, I know when we've had these conversations with Danny and Megan, it's great to have you on the show for the first time. Danny's become a bit of a regular. We've had landlords call in and contact, and are landlords able to kickstart the process? Because I would say, when you say we don't know who's out there, our landlords know who's
the landlords
out there, because they're not getting paid.
Correct.
And I want our listeners to know that I care as much about the tenant as I do the landlord, because both are in a tight spot on this.
Yes.
Can landlords kickstart the process in the next 20 days?
They can.
Yep, they can start the process, which is great. They can go online. It's TucsonPimaEP.com, and they can start basically a file and get the process going. Both the landlord and the tenant need to participate and cooperate to be able to get the assistance right now. But absolutely, that's actually been really efficient. At a certain point, we were seeing three for every one case started by a tenant. We saw three started by a landlord.
Okay.
It's something that's new and different about this approach than previous approaches, and so we're really pleased with that. We see this as a two-sided issue. Mm-hmm. We don't see this as a tenant or a landlord issue, tenant versus landlord. I think that sort of rhetoric and that sort of conversation is not particularly useful. Both the landlord and tenant are in need. And so this is trying to help both sides of that equation to keep our economy going. This is an important piece of our economy, not only people having shelter, but the idea there are plenty of mom and pop landlords that this is a big part of what their income is.
That's right.
And in our community, we really, I think, We rely on those mom and pops to provide a lot of our affordable housing.
Yes.
We can't do it without them. And so I think it's important to help them, to ensure that they get the funds that they need to keep going.
And it's important because without that, and a lot of them have sold off their assets.
And we lose it. And lose it as affordable housing, honestly.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's a lot of, you know, when those mom and pop landlords sell off their assets,
mm-hmm.
who's picking up those assets and how they are seeing that as affordable housing or not. And we don't mean necessarily Section 8. We mean housing that is accessible to people across a range of incomes. You lose that too. There's so many tentacles of this situation.
It's a very complicated, complex system, for housing.
We're trying our best to touch as many of these pieces as we can. Half an hour sounds like a lot of time until you get into studio and then it goes right by like this. We're already to our first break of the hour. Let's go ahead and take that. 790-2040. If you want to call in, bring something up that you think we haven't gotten to, or ask a question, Danny Nee with the Community Investment Corporation here in Tucson, Megan Headings, Family Housing Resources. These are the people you want to talk to. We'll be right back. When we return, I want to ask what happens July 1st. Forecast, what's going on? I'm getting cringy looks in studio. We got to just talk about it and be honest with the situation we're facing. July 1st, what happens? We'll be right back.
by and for the people of Tucson. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
If you are current or previous law enforcement, fire, paramedic, or military and are considering buying or selling real estate, then listen up. CNC Partners is dedicated to serving those who serve. When you buy or sell with their real estate team, they will give 10% of their commission back to you and your family at closing, as well as donate an additional 5% to the charity of your choice that serves first responders and or the military. If you're interested in this program, reach out directly at 520-406-0233. That's 406-0233. You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
Your Tucson Museum of Art is bringing back two special galleries, the Indigenous Arts Gallery and the Schmidt Gallery of Latin American Folk Art. See contemporary artworks brought to you by a committee of Indigenous community curators, exploring 21st century Indigenous peoples, cultural sovereignty, and practices. Examine how traditions from many regions of the Americas evolve and take on new meanings in a changing world. See both Thursday to Sunday weekly, 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. Reserve your ticket today at TucsonMuseumOfArt.org.
When looking at retirement planning, conventional thinking asks, how do I get a higher return? Should I take on more risk, or is there a better product? Jason Robinson and his team at Mass Mutual focuses on the overall strategy first. He and his team of advisors have the tools necessary to measure the proper balance of investments and actuarial science for the best path possible for the highest retirement income. Call Jason and his team at 520-274-3749 to have them run through an analysis at no cost to see how much more efficient you can be, and tell them Zach sent you over. What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about, and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at StorytellerPR.com to learn more.
Tucson's source for trusted news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
And we're back here in the 1030 The Voice studio, continuing this drive time hour of Tipping Point. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, in studio with Megan Headings, the Executive Director of Family Housing Resources, and Danny Nee, with the Community Investment Corporation. We're talking about the eviction moratorium that is ending on June 30th. Megan Headings, what happens on July 1st? What are we looking at as a community, both on the landlord side and the tenant side?
Yeah. So one of the interesting things about the current moratorium is that it didn't prevent landlords from still pursuing evictions. So some of that could still happen regardless of them having the declaration. But there's still a very complicated process for evictions that have to go through. So you have to receive the judgment. You then also have to receive the writ, which is what allows the constables to then go in and evict the individuals from the home. So it's not like July 1st, all of a sudden we would see this huge wave. However, there is implications that it will be a big wave, that it is a significantly large number. We have still seen, even with a moratorium, we've still seen, 50% of the normal amount of evictions going through here in Pima County. And that, when you think about it in terms of there being a moratorium in place, everyone assumes that no evictions were happening. That's not the case. Mm. And so there are a lot of writs that have already been established. A lot of the judges here, typically that there is a 45-day window that those writs last. Otherwise, you have to go back and have them renewed. A lot of the judges have actually been extending that 45-day so that they will be able to be executed as soon as the July 1 comes around. We are limited by the number of constables we have in town. So frankly, it's a manpower issue. Those are all sort of slow down the inevitable. The reality is, I think, and I appreciate coming on here today, is that we have to plead with the landlords to say, please wait. Please wait because there are funds available, and work with your tenants and find out, have they sought assistance? Are they on the list with CIC? And if not, get them on right away. It's a matter of time and process, but they can get assisted and there's funds available. And if they are on the process, CIC has a great transparent process. They can look up the status at any time. They can see where they're at. So they know, how long it's going to take before they're really assisted, what they're waiting on, if it's just documents that are needed before that assistance comes through. And then those checks are getting cut very quickly. I think Danny's cutting checks multiple times a week right now. And so those funds get out. Once it's approved, those funds are getting out right away. And so, truly, please wait and find out if your tenants qualify. And if they do, help them get the assistance, because then you're going to receive that payment. If you evict, honestly, the reality is you probably will never see that payment if you're a landlord. You're going to have, or if at best, you'll see a very small percentage and you'll have to go after that tenant for a long period of time. Tenants aren't paying right now because they have the funds and are just choosing to use it elsewhere. They're not paying because they have been unemployed for months.
So let me ask this question, and maybe we start with Danny on this one, Executive Director of the Community Investment Corporation. Are there landlords out there saying the housing market is tight? We have a lot of people who are looking for housing. I can't deal with two more months after 14, 15 months of this. If I evict, there's going to be two people behind that person who will be able to pay me today.
Yeah.
Is that a real pressure? And if that is a pressure, do we have numbers around how many people might be evicted? Because this eviction moratorium wasn't a forgiveness period.
No.
It was a you can pause paying. But if you haven't been assisted,
you're still responsible for
owing that. You are still responsible. So yes. You are now backlogged many months if you haven't gotten assistance. Mm-hmm. We've got 5 minutes, Danny. Shape up the numbers we're looking at here.
Well, so the answer to your question is yes. There certainly are some landlords who are looking at it and saying, with the housing pressures, we're seeing rents go up. One of the big issues that we are having is that when people are evicted for whatever reason, rehousing them has become, I'm not going to say impossible or nearly impossible, but extremely difficult.
Yeah.
There just is not the housing stock that's needed to rehouse people. I hope that people do understand too. This is an issue. You can't have large swaths of your community homeless. If you do, there are going to be there's going to be a number of costs that come with
downstream costs.
And so this idea of trying, and I think Megan is right. We ask for the patience of landlords if they can. Everybody has an individual situation. They're going to make their own individual choices around this. But the best thing is there are people who have been waiting, 12 months without payment. That's roughly, we looked at it, it's roughly 7% of all the people asking are asking for a full 12 months, which is the maximum. When you add in, it doubles when you go to 10 months or more. So about 15% of people, landlords, have been out 10 months of more from the data that we're showing of the people applying to us. And so that's significant amounts of money, and people have to make their own choices. But you're right, Megan. Like, if they evict, they will not be able to get that back payment. We are not going to run out of money. The issue currently is how quickly we can get it out. And I'm sorry, like, I'm the person, our organization is responsible for getting the money out as quickly as possible. And we're doing it, again, faster than anybody in Arizona, right. And we're still not doing it fast enough.
Two and a half minutes, I want to get this in. Do we have a number of how many families or individuals, if they were, if this moratorium ended today, how many are being evicted out into the streets in our community? Do we have a number for that?
I don't think we have a true number. That's been a really hard thing that a lot of great minds have been working on. And so it's a very hard thing to predict at this point in time, because there's so many people that we are just sort of unknown about, unknown what the reality of their circumstances are. There's not a lot of great data out there, but I think it's high. I think we should all assume it's high, much higher than we've ever seen before.
Four figures, five figures.
Well, it was estimated at one point that it was around 16,000 would be evicted. That was prior to the assistance. So when you put that in, right. you are talking about a problem, I think, conservatively would be 5,000 families.
Yeah. And again, conservatively.
We're not holding you to any number, because we know we're ballparking.
Right. It is truly
And there's
a
no
prediction.
Real option out there right now. There's no one prepared to figure out how to house 5,000 people.
All of the shelters are currently maxed out. As Danny stated, rehousing people already that have been evicted is incredibly challenging. Vacancy rate is at an all-time low in our community. So
I will say the Arizona Multi-Housing Association, we've worked with them, and they often represent landlords and a lot of the big landlords, and they've been good partners. Like a lot of the big places have been really good about being patient. And
they've seen the value.
Yeah, they see the value of this. And we're very thankful that we do have partners who are also telling landlords, be patient. These guys are, will get you the money. It's just getting through.
And I know we're running out of time. I do want to just reiterate, it's 12 months back rent that this program is covering, as well as 3 months forward. So waiting, you can get a new tenant in tomorrow. They're only going to start paying you for the month going forward. You'll never recoup those costs. So if you can wait, and a lot of places are coming back online. Employment is coming back. And so we are really hopeful that with the 3 months forward, people will then be set and start to resume on their own. And they'll return to being tenants that you appreciate having and can pick back up where they left off.
CICTucson.org. And we also want to point people as well to FHRTucson.org. Visit those websites to get involved in this program. Danny, Megan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Hugh Chilla Klein. Appreciate you guys.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks.
We'll be back after a short break. Don't go anywhere.
A Bloomberg Money Minute and CBS News at the bottom of every hour. 10:30, The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
If you are current or previous law enforcement, fire, paramedic, or military and are considering buying or selling real estate, then listen up. CNC Partners is dedicated to serving those who serve. When you buy or sell with their real estate team, they will give 10% of their commission back to you and your family at closing, as well as donate an additional 5% to the charity of your choice that serves first responders and or the military. If you're interested in this program, reach out directly at 520-406-0233. That's 406-0233. You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Trusted local news and talk all day, every day. 1030 The Voice.
Good morning, Tucson and Southern Arizona. Again, welcome into the 1030 The Voice studio for this morning's drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. If you're just joining us, I'm your host, Zach Yenser. We talk about the stories of the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future, talking about the news, politics, policies, and issues that you care about. We just said goodbye, to our guest for the first half of the show, Danny Nee, the Executive Director of the Community Investment Corporation, and Megan Headings, the Executive Director of Family Housing Resources, two leaders of two nonprofits who are working ahead of the impending end of the eviction moratorium on June 30th. July 1st, the moratorium ends. And since COVID started, we've had renewals of the moratorium. We've had more resources available for both landlords and tenants. That all slows to a trickle and really takes a new chapter once we get into July. And so what does that mean when the eviction moratorium is lifted? And we heard some numbers of 5,000 to maybe 16,000, rough ballpark numbers, nobody really knows, but 5,000 to 15,000 individuals who may be in real trouble of eviction, who may be put out onto the streets, so to speak, and there's really nowhere for them to go. And on the other hand, when we say the word landlord, the perception of that word seems to be, you know, these folks who are on yachts in the Bahamas, who every 30 days, you know, check their multifamily housing buildings and go, oh, they still exist. These are Joes and Janes. Such a huge percentage of these landlords are individuals for whom these are very small income properties that help them put dinner on the table. And I've been trying to be very clear from the beginning that this is not just a tenant conversation. This is not just a landlord conversation. It really is everybody, because at the end of the day, we're talking about real life men and women who are challenged on both spectrums of this situation. So it's good to catch up with Danny and Megan. And it just made me think, and we were talking about this as they were heading out of the studio to leave, is that now the issue, and it's been the issue, but now once we get through this eviction stuff, now the question becomes, okay, now how are we creating more affordable housing? And yes, that means affordable as the federal government designs it. Yes, that means more Section 8, but not just that. I like to use the word accessible more. Can folks on a spectrum of incomes, both under the poverty line, but also lower middle class to middle class, find housing where they want it at the price they can afford? And at some level, that is going to require creating a lot more housing than we are doing today. And it's going to require a public-private partnership. You know, I usually lean towards the free market side of things. I think if you take a lot of regulations off of housing, if you make a slow process faster, if you allow the Joes and Janes in our neighborhoods to create more duplexes, triplexes, townhomes, condos, if you re-democratize that process, if you will, like we used to in this country, of a lighter hand in neighborhood development, that is super important. The challenge, though, that we're facing now is that the cost of labor has gone up, the cost of goods has gone up. The free market on its own is not designed to incentivize in any way the development of low-cost housing. The other word that gets demonized a lot is developers. And a lot of people don't know what those men and women are having to deal with. There's a development in town that has been slowed considerably because of, get this, a lumber shortage in Canada. The lumber shortage in Canada for about a year has prevented certain development from happening. Those are new units that can't hit the market because of a lumber shortage. And yes, that means lumber that is standing up buildings from the bottom up, you know, right? We're talking about the stuff that you got to use to get the first floor going, you know? There are so many dynamics to this, and there is a place for the government to both step out and step in. There is a role for the government, for the public sector today, to step out in some ways where it's in and it shouldn't be, and to step in, whether it's gap financing or different subsidies or different incentives. This is going to take the public-private sector to come together and figure out how to make this happen. And the government can also fix some zoning challenges that are making housing really hard to happen. I think if I'm challenged by one thing that I do see in the community, it's that over the last few years, time and time again, when we start making real progress towards making housing happen faster, or getting the conversations in the community going to get housing happening faster, we start to reinvent the wheel again. And I think some of the things that I've been challenged by, you know, include, hey, we're getting to this point where we can start making housing happening faster. And then the city of Tucson takes a step back to consider, well, do we set up a development corporation? And I mean, these are good conversations to have, but we have to stop talking about the issue and start actually making it happen, to start actually doing things. And so that's just kind of some of my thoughts as we had Danny Nee and Megan Headings in to talk about housing. Let's go to a bit of an early break. When we come back, we will spend the rest of the hour with Devin Underwood. Workforce pivots. How can small and mid-sized businesses, and we know so many of you out there are running those size of businesses, stand out in this crazy labor market? How do you make it so people are clamoring to your job applications? I know it's a pain point. You're feeling it. We'll talk about it after the break.
To Vail and everywhere in between. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
Your Tucson Museum of Art is bringing back two special galleries, the Indigenous Arts Gallery and the Schmidt Gallery of Latin American Folk Art. See contemporary artworks brought to you by a committee of Indigenous community curators, exploring 21st century Indigenous peoples, cultural sovereignty, and practices. Examine how traditions from many regions of the Americas evolve and take on new meanings in a changing world. See both Thursday to Sunday weekly, 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. Reserve your ticket today at TucsonMuseumOfArt.org.
Now open to you. The Arizona Sands Club is your new home away from home. Located inside the Lowell Stevens Football Facility, this private dining and lifestyle club is a culmination of a long-held goal to create a social gathering space within our university and community. Filled with Wildcat spirit against the backdrop of Arizona Stadium, call us today to learn how you can take advantage of our dining and meeting spaces for personal use, business purposes, and social events and celebrations. Call 621-8300.
Hey there, Ari here with the Marinas team at Nova Home Loans. We share Zach's passion on Tipping Point of shaping yours and our community's best possible future. If that looks like purchasing a home in 2021, we want to be your partner in choosing the program that is the best possible decision for your financial and family goals. Call me at 878-7518 and let me know you heard us on Tipping Point to get started.
Ariel Ari Barrera, NMLS ID 1982127. Nova Home Loans, NMLS number 3087, BK0902429. Equal housing opportunity.
Why I love where I live.
It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live.
Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyiloveWhereILive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live?
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Hey, Tucson and Southern Arizona, we are back in the 1030 The Voice studios. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. You're listening to this Drive Time Hour of Tipping Point. We're joined now in studio by Devin Underwood, the principal and founder of the Talent Store, to talk about how small, mid-sized businesses can stand out as employers of choice in a crazy, crazy job and labor market. Devin Underwood, good morning to you.
Hey, Zach, how are you? Happy Thursday.
You had to look, didn't you?
I did. It all blends together for me.
Devin, it's great to have you back on the air with us on Thursdays, and appreciate what you do in the community. You know, Devin, I was talking to a friend of mine in the Phoenix area, and they were talking about how, you know, even pre, but also during COVID, if they had submitted a job posting, they would have gotten 60 applications in. They're getting now, and this is the real number, two for that same job posting. They're a small to mid-sized business, Devin. This is your area of expertise. How can small and mid-sized businesses stand out as employers of choice in this crazy, crazy job market?
Yeah, you know, it was already happening pre-COVID. So particularly depending on what position you're hiring for, but at the entry level or mid-career levels, as we're getting Gen Z into the workforce, and then also millennials now with what was experienced with COVID. And I just saw a meme the other day that we have millennials, we have elderly millennials, we have all these levels of millennials now broken down. But
geriatric is the word that I saw. Geriatric millennials.
Yes. Yes. And then you have the Xennial and then the X, right? So, but, you know, even before COVID, they were most concerned, particularly Gen Z, with the size or reputation of the employer. And so when you're a smaller mid business and they don't know who you are, they often won't hit apply. And now add to that, they don't know how you handled COVID. They don't know how you acted in that scenario. there's a huge, big spotlight on how people were treated, how safe they felt. And people are kind of, there's a little bit of trauma there. And they're wondering how they go about balancing everything that they took on with working. And you know, particularly, then you add to that the female side of the equation. A lot of women dropped out of the workforce. So we lost people in the workforce. We lost people actually physically. We lost people because they saw their friends get really sick and ill. And then we lost people because their lives got very complicated. And so they had to lean out. So the workforce shrunk. And then on top of that, who you are as an employer, your employer brand became even more important now when people choose to hit apply. So that first part of my listicle is, what is your employer brand? And when you're a small and mid business, it's really hard to stand out against people who have spent time, money, resources, and have a whole team talking about who they are as an employer. And so, you know, how do you get a partner that tells your story, that showcases who you are, that gets people really interested in working for someone who's small, mid, and local? That's a huge piece of the puzzle. And then when you talk about job posting, you're talking about reach. So how do you, as a small business who maybe hires two leaders or key positions a year, how do you invest in the seats that are needed to get the reach that the big companies have? So for instance, my LinkedIn seat cost me $5,000 a quarter. That is not really a reasonable investment for a small to mid business.
Jeez.
So how do you partner with someone that has that reach, that gets you out there? That's another thing to consider, because I promise you the big guys have it.
It's always interesting to talk with you, Devin, because for anybody who is listening who maybe hasn't heard our conversations before, Devin's role is really kind of a middle person, if you will, in terms of hearing from both employers saying, this is what we need, these are the people we need, and then saying, Devin, go and interface with some of the interests that we have from the potential employees. So Devin is really hearing the needs and challenges from both the employer and the employee. And so Devin, I'm always interested in what you're hearing. You know, certainly, and we won't probably land here for very long, but we've seen out in the news, I wanna talk to you as a real life person hearing these things. We've heard, you know, I was reading in the Washington Post, Devin, same day, two different articles about where are the workers? And one article said, we don't have enough childcare. People aren't coming back to work because of childcare. And another article the exact same day in the exact same news medium said, it's not really a problem. The data is showing it's not really a problem. Of course, wages is something that I would say labor and employees have the leverage on right now. They really have the leverage to say, if you're not going to pay X amount, I'm not coming. And employers are in a crunch where they kind of have to say, all right, we'll flex with you as much as we can. How much is wage and childcare a big deal to the labor market that you're engaging with in your role at the Talent Store, Devin?
Wage is huge. Childcare I've not heard a lot about.
Okay.
I think, and any of it really though is anecdotal in my mind. We can talk statistics and we can talk big picture and we can take survey data. But when I go out on a search, I know there is someone for this job. I just need to find them. I need to find them, and I need to find them in the right time. So it's timing and it's story. And story, authentic story. But for my clients, how are you being represented? How are people reaching out to who you need, not just posting and praying? Right, which is part of the, I posted it on Indeed and I only got two applications. We can talk about job postings more deeply at another conversation, because if you're posting a job description, you're not going to get, you know, you're not attracting and interesting to the people that are looking at it. But, you know, who's telling your story? Who's telling about the market, about who you are as an employer? Who's authentically reflecting who's needed for this role and attracting that person for you? And when I'm having a conversation, we can flesh out those wants. If it's a child care issue that's getting in the way, if it's a wage issue that's getting in the way, if it's a benefits issue that's getting in the way. I worked with a client who has somebody who's local to Tucson working for remotely for a San Francisco company, carries the benefits for her family. Her husband's an entrepreneur. It wasn't as much about the actual salary because she knew she had to step back in order to be local to Tucson. It was about the benefits. So who's fleshing that out for you? Who's understanding that equation for the person you need, not the market as a whole? That's a really big piece of the puzzle. But compensation's a big deal. And I think Tucson's going to really have to rethink pay scales with remote work. And there's a lot of, there's the market research you can do around compensation, which is what is the average compensation for this position in my locality? But there's also, you're going to need to look at the competitive compensation around you. And you're going to need to have somebody who can handle the conversations with the people you're trying to attract who maybe aren't working locally.
It's interesting. Devin.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Nope. Besides that.
I am wanting to kind of put myself, as I'm talking with you, kind of in the shoes of some of my listeners as well that I know are out there. I think one of the things that has certainly been a challenge to kind of the food and service industry is that a number of those folks took this time to make a career shift. And so I would have to imagine that a number of people that are maybe interfacing with you now as applicants to some of the job postings for some of the companies you work with have made a shift in industry. What would you say in terms of brand and finding the right people to, maybe the mid-size, let's say brewery or restaurant company, maybe two or three stores in Tucson, they're trying to figure out, do I raise my minimum wage higher now on my own to attract workers? But then what does that mean with my cost of goods going up and my cost of goods or my goods shortage? And then do I put that onto my consumer or do I eat that as a company? Those businesses too are trying to stand out and tell people, hey, it's safe to come in and we're going to try to figure out how to pay you as much as we can. What would you say to those kind of companies in terms of what you do?
Yeah, and it depends on the place. So if it's a fast food or fast casual, we're seeing that they're completely being aggressive with base pay.
The
companies that are surviving and getting applicants.
Oh, got it.
They are not thinking about tips. They have totally changed their compensation plan. And they are looking at full financial opportunity that they can give to the people working. So there's a huge compensation component that needs to be reconfigured in the hospitality industry. And it's a difficult time for everybody there, including business owners. But if your business plan is based on very inexpensive labor, it is no longer a business plan that's going to work. And so you're going to have to reconfigure your business plan. And I know that's really hard to say out loud and to hear. But the people who are doing well have reconfigured that compensation. On the high-end hospitality or high-end like service industry, there's still a big tip component that helps people get paid. But in fast casual, in lots of other areas, just take it out of the equation and compensate people. The other piece of the puzzle is how do you talk about your story? And your story is who you are as an employer and how you treat people. So you need to understand how your employees are reviewing you on the internet. Mm. How do they talk about you? How do they talk about your experience working for you? And then also tell your story about who your customers are. Let me tell you, lots of people in the service industry have trauma right now because of how they were treated by customers. And so that was a big deal. It became really political and weird. They had to enforce things and they were left with no support. And they were in fights with people. that they didn't, they're not people that want to fight. These are people who like to serve, who like to do nice things, who like to make people happy. That's why they're in that industry. And so how do you differentiate yourself by talking about how great your customers are? How many regulars you have? You know, how are you telling that story when you're asking for people to apply to your jobs? Mm. I know it's something they don't necessarily think about, but I know people in that industry who are choosing places based on that.
Wow. Devin, as always, I get near the end of our conversations, and I go, man, this is always more nuanced and complex than I imagine. If there's a company listening, a business owner listening, go, I'm ready to have a deeper conversation around understanding what my employees, former and present, are saying. I'm ready to tell that story. I'm ready to kind of rework a little bit of my planning to make sure that I can attract and retain the talent that I need. What's the best way that they can engage with the Talent Store with you, Devin?
Yeah, definitely go to yourtalentstore.com. We have two services to offer in this world. One is the advising services. So we can look at your brand. We can look at what you're doing, how you're talking about yourself, and get you an entire system and process to attract better. And talent acquisition processes, all of those things. And then we also help with key position and leadership placement. So those director, VP, C-suite, and just key positions that are going to make the difference in your business, we'll do all of the work for you. So go to yourtalentstore.com.
And maybe, Devin, for kind of like we were talking about the food and hospitality industry, maybe there's a new rethinking of what an HR leader looks like as well. Maybe that's a piece of this. And I could see that being very much what you can assist with at the Talent Store, Devin.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a big position we're helping companies fill right now, is
wow.
HR and operations.
Amazing.
This is huge because they have to rethink it completely.
Yes. Devin Underwood, principal and founder of the Talent Store, thanks as always for guiding our Tucson businesses, small and large, in engaging our labor market here well, getting Tucson's employers and employees back to work well. Devin, we'll see you later this month. Take care.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Devin. We'll be back on Friday to close out the week, Tucson, here on Tipping Point. Stay safe. Bill Buckmaster at noon. Take care.